Good morning. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. It's 10 past 8 on this Wednesday morning, May the 23rd. Wisconsin's U.S. Senator Russ Feingold has strong criticism for his own Democratic Party. Feingold is unhappy with fellow Democrats for backing down too soon in a standoff over the war in Iraq. Feingold says the desire for political comfort won out over real action. Feingold has been working with party leaders to pressure the Bush administration and congressional Republicans on the Iraq war. The senator condemns the new agreement announced yesterday to fund the next phase of the Iraq war without any timelines for troop withdrawals. Unable to override a presidential veto, Democrats backed off the timetable date. The new agreement does contain some benchmarks or conditions, and the new bill also contains about $17 billion in domestic and military-related spending that President Bush had not asked for. We're going to talk about this new funding bill and wonder what you think of it. Are you disappointed with it, as Senator Feingold is, or is this the best that can be done? Are you pleased that Congress is likely to pass a bill to fund the war in Iraq through September? 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, in Madison, 263-1890, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. We'll talk about what's in this bill and its chances for passage and the politics of all this with Christopher Gelpe, Associate Professor of Political Science at Duke University. He is co-author of Choosing Your Battles, America, Civil, Military Relations, and the Use of Force, and Paying the Human Costs of War, American Public Opinion and Casualties in Military Conflicts. And he joins us by telephone. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Thanks a lot for being with us. Well, talk about choosing your battles. is that the Democrats caved? Is that what happened here?
I think they did, or at least they are regrouping to fight another day. I think what's really going on here, as you had said earlier, is the Democrats don't have the votes right now to override a veto, and so they were choosing between the strategy that, say, Senator Feingold and John Edwards have been pushing, which is simply to send the same bill and force the president to veto it and try to argue that the president is responsible for not funding the troops, or seeking some sort of compromise. And clearly they chose the latter yesterday. I think they probably chose that because they feel that a few months from now, they will be in a better position. They may be in a better position to override a presidential veto because they've only funded the war through September, and by that time, President Bush will have come to report to them a couple of times, and most importantly, I think General Petraeus will have come to report on the extent to which the troop escalation is succeeding, and some Republicans have indicated that they would be willing to reconsider their position on the war after hearing from General Petraeus.
Mm-hmm.
So come September, if things don't look significantly better, the Democrats may be able to muster a veto-proof majority that would cut off funds in the way they want.
What sorts of conditions or benchmarks are in this new agreement?
Well, it's the same sorts of things that have been goals for some time here, which have to do with, you know, with passing laws about oil revenues and political progress for the Iraqi government. Frankly, I think they are going to be tough things to meet. They've been trying to meet them for a while. And I think it's also probably not an accident that we've seen released stories today about how the president is developing a new strategy that focuses on political goals for the Iraqi government over the summer. So, you know, Bush is clearly focusing on trying to get political progress in terms of compromise among the various sectarian factions on sharing oil and federalism and so on. I am skeptical, frankly, that we will have much success in doing that because there are these, you know, roadblock people in power like Muqtada al-Sadr, and they're in power for a reason, because they have a lot of support domestically, and I think it's going to be tough for us to change that.
Mm-hmm. This bill also contains $17 billion, it says here, in domestic and military-related spending that the Democrats say, you know, say that this is a victory because they got this this pork in there that the president
right.
didn't want.
Yeah, it is. I mean, it is a lot of spending that they wanted through and the president didn't. So that is a success for them on some other issues. You know, the extent to which it's pork, I think one would have to
right.
sort of comb through them and see how much earmarking is going on. You know, I think that's become such a prevalent thing. I'm sure there's a great deal of pork. I would say that there are probably also some other, you know, real substantive bills that they wanted, like a minimum wage, an increase in the minimum wage that is, you know, that is arguably not pork.
But, right, exactly.
So, you know, that is definitely a face-saving sort of gesture that the president is likely to give them, which is to allow these other bills to go through. It's a relatively small concession in comparison, I think, to not having benchmarks, because the war is so much the overriding issue. It's the issue that drove the Democrats into power, and I think it's the issue on which they're largely going to be judged.
Yeah, and if it put them into power, why didn't they have the power to stick with it?
Well, it just barely put them into power, especially in the Senate. You know, I mean, they have Senator Lieberman, for example, who is, you know, while they only have a 51-49 majority, you have Senator Lieberman, who is, you know, very much a supporter of the president's Iraq policy, and that's going to make it very hard to push any kind of extreme legislation through.
You know, we had I quoted our Senator Feingold, who was very upset with this bill.
Right.
And he says he's not going to vote for it. I heard Nancy Pelosi saying, well, I'm not sure I can vote for this either without the timeline. And I mean, is this going to pass?
I think it will pass, mm-hmm. because it actually doesn't need much support from the Democrats in order to pass, mm-hmm. Because Republicans will vote for it overwhelmingly. And so as long as the Democrats muster some, you know, modest amount of support for the bill, it will pass. I think it does put some people in a tough position. In particular, you know, Nancy Pelosi is on the one hand trying to sell the bill and say that it's a, mm-hmm. you know, it's a victory, and at least, you know, it's better than what we had done before. But at the same time, she's saying, well, maybe she won't vote for it. So I think it puts people like her in a tricky position. And potentially, I think it puts Senator Obama and Senator Clinton in a tricky position as to what they're going to do.
Yeah. Do we know what they're going to do?
I have not heard what they're going to do. I think that if they vote for this bill, it would be a tremendous opportunity for John Edwards to sort of launch himself into the same sort of tier of candidate that they've been, because then he would
stand out
even more as the anti-war candidate. Probably for that reason, I would expect them to vote against it. But again, that's you know, they're fairly sort of major leading figures in the Senate. That would be an odd thing for the Democratic leadership to be pushing through this bill that their own major figures don't support. Another option for them might be simply not to vote, but I think that would probably be a bad strategy and would sort of allow them to look like they're sort of waffling on the war, and allow people like John Edwards to say, you know, the last thing we need is another flip-flopper on the war running for president.
We are talking about the new bill, the new agreement between Congress and the White House over an Iraq funding bill. Looks like Congress is moving toward passing this week an Iraq spending bill that would fund the war through September, but it does not order troop withdrawal. The Democrats gave up on that because apparently unable to override a presidential veto. So did the Democrats cave? And are you pleased or disappointed with this bill? 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.
We are going to look, after we finish this, to the defense authorization bill, which will be coming up in the next few weeks. And as a result of that, we're going to continue our battle, and that's what it is, to represent the American people like they want us to represent them, to change the course of the war in Iraq.
That's Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid commenting yesterday on this deal on an Iraq funding bill. Democrats have agreed to not set a date for U.S. troop withdrawal in this current bill. Democrats won $17 billion in domestic and military-related spending that the president had not asked for. The bill would also threaten to withhold reconstruction aid if Iraq fails to make progress on political and security reforms. Many Democrats are not happy with the removal of the timeline for troop withdrawal. We wonder if you are. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. We're talking with Christopher Gelp. He is an associate professor of political science at Duke University. And our first caller is Dan in Partyville. Hi, Dan. You're on the air.
Good morning, Joy. Of course the Democrats caved. That's what Feingold is scolding them for. Cutting off funding for this madness in Iraq is not an extreme measure. It's what the Democrats were elected to do. And so how can we, in good conscience, vote for Democrats in the future when they don't have the backbone to do what they were elected to do? I'll hang up and listen.
All right. What do you think, Professor
Jumpy? Well, I think Dan is probably not alone in his feelings right now. I think it is true that Democrats did, you know, sweep to victory in 2006 on strength of opposition to the war. There is a distinction, though, between what is popular among sort of the Democratic base and what is popular with the public at large. And actually, the bill that looks like it's going to be passed is pretty close to the median sort of public opinion position on the issue, that if you give people options of, you know, time certain for withdrawal, benchmarks, or stay the course, the median position that, that people will give, this is from a Fox News survey I saw just recently, the median position is the benchmarks. So what we're seeing here is a distinction between what the Democratic base wants and the folks who moved people, moved the Democrats into power versus, you know, what is the sort of middle-of-the-road public opinion position, and I think that's putting the Democrats in a bind.
Yeah. Why is it so hard for Democrats to hold firm on, let's say, Feingold's bill to defund the war?
Well, I think that is essentially playing chicken in a certain way, which is to say, who's going to get the blame for what? Mm-hmm. What would happen if that is that you would risk American troops who are currently in Iraq not having funding? And so the question is, who would be blamed for that? Because that's something that the public is very much opposed to. And, you know, regardless of how opposed to the war people have been, there's been a strong sense that the troops need to be supported, need to be equipped, and so on. And the polling data that I've seen suggested that if you ask people, you know, if the troops don't get funded, who's more to blame, the president or Congress, a plurality, though not a majority, were saying the Democratic leadership in Congress.
Uh-huh.
And I think that the Democratic leadership, rather than risk being blamed for not funding the troops now, preferred to regroup and fight again in September, as I said earlier, where they think they may have a chance to really win and have a veto-proof majority.
Especially if things do not go well over
right.
the next few months.
If General Petraeus can't come and give a strong report of progress.
Yeah. Pat in Brookfield is with us now. Hi, Pat.
Hi. I'm one of those that's very disappointed in the Democrats. I wish they would listen to Feingold. He's done right in the past. And I fear, though, that part of the reason the Democrats aren't listening to people like Feingold or their base is because they don't even understand what's in these benchmarks. when they had the town hall meeting with the Democrats on Air America, a caller had called in and asked Christopher Dodd, you know, are you going to go along with this hydrocarbon law, which is going to turn 80% of Iraq's oil over to the American and British? And Christopher Dodd said, oh, gee, I hope that's not true. I don't think that's true, which led me to believe he doesn't even know what's in here. And I guess the American public, when you talk about polls, I think if the American public knew what one of these main benchmarks is, they would all back Feingold in getting us out of there right away, because it would show that this is basically a war for the oil companies. And, you know, I'd just like to comment, I mean, you can't even get any information about the hydrocarbon law on mainstream media. I've heard a few things about it on Air America and alternative news.
And on this program, if you were listening.
Right. Yes, I have heard it on the air. Mm-hmm. And, you know, but the main thing is, this main benchmark, this is why Bush is trying to get this through. This is why the neocons, they don't care about anything else, but they've got to get this passed. And, you know, just to inform people, you know, 35 years ago, all the Mideastern countries kicked these companies out because they were, you know, plundering and taking everything from these countries. And right now, Saudi Arabia, Iran, all the other Mideast countries forbid foreign control of any of their oil. And one of these benchmarks that we are pushing the Iraq parliament to pass is going to reverse this that was, you know, turned over 35 years ago. And these American oil companies have been trying to get this reversed for 35 years.
Yeah, let me get our guest to comment. Is that right, Professor Gelpy?
Well, I think largely, yes, it is. Mm-hmm. I think that, you know, the kinds of benchmarks that are, these are benchmarks that were proposed by the Bush administration. And they are benchmarks that the Bush administration felt like they could live with. And they certainly picked out ones that they felt were to the advantage of the United States and especially the supporters of the Bush administration, which is, you know, big oil. So I think the caller's largely correct. I think the reason that it has played out this way is because what's going on is a battle over the symbolism of success. And what some of the research that I and my colleagues Peter Fever and Jason Reifler have done suggests that the primary factor driving the sort of middle-of-the-road public opinion over the war is going to be, do they think the mission can succeed? And so benchmarks are getting bandied about largely not for what they will specifically do, but rather what they will symbolize, or what the president hopes they will symbolize, which is progress in Iraq, which if he can demonstrate progress, I think he would be able to buy himself some more time.
An email from Bradley in La Crosse. Why isn't anyone talking about the fact that we can't afford this war, whether we want it or not? Where's this money coming from? How are we going to pay off this debt?
Well, yeah, that's sort of a political choice about whether you want to tax people or not. I mean, we could pay for this war, which is a separate question of whether we should pay for this war. But we could pay for the war by raising taxes. This administration has decided that they are going to wage a couple of different wars while not asking the American public to pay for it. And so that means that we're going to run huge deficits. But that's a political choice rather than an actually we can't afford it.
Kathy in Watertown is with us. Hi, Kathy.
Hi. Hey, I was thinking if the Democrats were smart about this, they'd say, okay, we took the benchmarks out, but come September, the funding's done. And you can choose what you want to choose. But unfortunately, we don't have really smart people thinking beyond next year's election or the year after election. I just don't.
Yeah, and we've got kind of a bad connection with your cell phone, Kathy, but take the benchmarks out and just say the funding's over after September. That's not going to fly either.
I don't think they're likely to get what they really want with that position either, which is what they really want is a majority that can override a presidential veto and enforce the benchmark. And so that's going to enforce the withdrawal of of troops and funding. And so that's going to mean that the withdrawal is going to need to happen over a period of time. And frankly, you know, in order to sort of withdraw this many troops in a reasonably organized fashion and so on that keeps them as safe as possible, is going to take some time. So I don't think we're likely to see that. But I do think that if General Petraeus comes to Congress and doesn't give a very strong endorsement of progress, which, in my own opinion, is a very likely result, then, you know, I think the Democrats will be in a much stronger position a few months from now to get enough Republican support, people like Senator Warner and so on, that that they may be able to force a timetable on the president.
We're talking with Christopher Gelpe, Associate Professor of Political Science at Duke University, author of a number of books, including The Forthcoming, Paying the Human Costs of War, American Public Opinion, and Casualties in Military Conflicts, talking about this bill that Congress will likely be sending President Bush, another version of the Iraq funding bill, but this one does not have a timeline for troop withdrawal. Ken in Stoughton, hi, you're on the air.
Hi, this is kind of a piggyback on the last question. I was wondering what the guest would think is the likelihood that the Bush administration is going to actually allow General Petraeus to give an honest and unfettered opinion about what might be happening. The administration has a history of relieving people at a convenient time.
Yeah, it certainly is the case that a number of military officers who did not share the administration's views on military strategy in Iraq have found that it was convenient to retire. However, in this particular case, I find that unlikely because I think so much for Bush hangs on what Petraeus says. I mean, in terms of persuasiveness with the American people, the president is really at a very low ebb right now. I think most of the American public does not look to the president for their information on what's happening in Iraq. I've seen poll data recently that asks people, you know, who do you trust more for your information on Iraq, President Bush or General Petraeus or someone else? General Petraeus got over 50%. People said they trusted Petraeus the most. Bush only got about 15%. So I think that in order to be credible with the public at all, Bush really needs Petraeus at this point, and he's in a weak enough position in terms of his approval of his handling of Iraq that it would be difficult for him to remove Petraeus, and especially after so much effort was put into identifying Petraeus as the new general with the new ideas and the new strategy. So I think he's likely to come and testify. Now, how much pressure will he receive to, you know, place a positive sort of spin on what's been happening in Iraq? That's difficult to say. Petraeus has a reputation for being pretty willing to speak his mind. So, you know, I certainly wouldn't say that the Bush administration is going to say, go on up there and tell him whatever you think. But he's a relatively independent person, so I think he's unlikely to simply, you know, completely spin the thing as the administration wants.
Thanks to Ken. Scott in Lodi is with us now. Hi, Scott.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call.
Yes.
It seems to me that Democrats have put themselves in a bit of a trap here, with a fair number of them trapped and not wanting to vote for this, but still having to push it. We face the point where they've included a minimum wage, and the majority of the voters congressmen that will vote for this will be Republican, giving them the ability to take credit for the minimum wage increase.
Well, they're going to take care of that in the House by splitting the bill. So they're going to split it into two sections. One will be the billion in spending, and the other will be the war funding. And so what you'll see in the House is that all the Democrats will vote for the spending, and many of them will back off on the war. In the Senate, I think you're right. From what I understand, they are not going to split the bill in the Senate, and that does place a number of senators in a real bind. Especially as I was saying before, I think Senators Clinton and Obama are in a bind as to whether they're going to then vote against increasing the minimum wage, for example.
Now, Senator Feingold was also very critical, saying the Democratic leaders should have allowed additional votes and amendments to this war spending bill. Are they saying no amendments, nothing can be added or taken away from this?
Right, it's going to be voted on as is. I mean, you know, if you allowed amendments in the Senate, you'd just basically be reopening the floor to his bill to everything, right? You know, mm-hmm. In the Senate, you can add an amendment that says, "I amend the bill by striking it and replacing my bill."
So
that's why they need to do it as a package.
Yeah. So who, I almost hate to say this, but who gets hurt or helped the most on the campaign trail with this particular standoff and the way it turned out?
Well, I think it really helps John Edwards. I think it gives him a chance to, it highlights the war as an issue, and I think he has been out there as the most vocally anti-war candidate. Again, from the sort of poll results I've seen, his anti-war ads, you know, about stopping the funding have been the most sort of popular ads among the Democratic base. So I think highlighting this issue and the failure of the Democratic leadership to do what he wanted to do, which is to simply keep sending them the same bill, gives him a real opportunity to distinguish himself from Clinton and Obama and potentially to launch himself into competition with them.
Are the conditions, the benchmarks in this bill the same as they were in that bill last week that could just be ignored or waived by
the president? Yes, they can be waived. Mm-hmm. So it really is extremely weak in terms of what the president needs to report to Congress and on progress toward these benchmarks. There can be withdrawal of aid at the discretion of the president if they don't meet them, but he can waive that. And frankly, aid money to the Iraqi government is not really an issue yet because they're not actually capable of spending all the money that we've already given them. So it really is very weak as a sanction against them.
In fact, Harry Reid called that bill weak tea last week, and now he has to kind of stand there and
he's
say this.
The weak tea. Yeah.
Stand there and say that this is a victory, or in some ways, for Democrats.
Yeah, it was definitely an interesting sort of speech that he gave, which was trying to put the best face on a bill that he was clearly very dissatisfied with.
Yeah.
And you know, I think they made the political decision that it was better to regroup and wait for a time when they thought they could get more Republican support.
Well, we wonder what you think. We have open lines now for your reaction to this Iraq funding bill that was announced yesterday, a compromise that was reached yesterday. It funds the war in Iraq through September, but does not contain a timeline for troop withdrawal. It does contain billions of dollars in additional spending, including a minimum wage hike. Is this a victory for Democrats or a defeat? Are you pleased with this bill or not? What questions do you have? 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. In Madison, 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Good to have you with us on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Stay tuned. Coming up after 9 o'clock, Kathleen Dunn is with you. Kathleen will be talking about Florida moving up that state's primary to January 29th. What's going on here, and are we on our way toward a national primary? And does that mean Wisconsin's going to be ignored with our extremely late February primary? That's coming up after 9 o'clock. We're talking about the war in Iraq, the funding bill that Congress is expected to pass this week that will fund the war in Iraq through September. But this bill, unlike the ones that either didn't pass or were vetoed by President Bush, does not include a timeline for troop withdrawal. And we have lots of Democrats who believe that this is bad, including U.S. Senator Russ Feingold, who is very disappointed in his fellow Democrats for caving on this issue. We wonder what you think and what questions you have for our guest, Christopher Gelpy, who is an associate professor of political science at Duke University, co-author of many different books, including Choosing Your Battles, America's Civil-Military Relations and the Use of Force, and the forthcoming Paying the Human Cost of War, American Public Opinion and Casualties in Military Conflicts. Our first, we got an email from Randy in La Crosse. I guess this is kind of tongue-in-cheek. In my opinion, Democrats caved and have turned their backs on the promises of the 06 election to end the war. I think it's time for a no-confidence vote on the House Democratic leadership. This people are who are Democrats are angry at Democrats, Professor.
Yeah, Gelpy. I think this really does highlight a division that has been in the Democratic Party for quite some time now, in terms of the certainly even going back to before the 2004 election, between the real sort of party faithful, the base, who have been for ending the war as soon as possible, immediately, and sort of moderate Democrats who have been for, you know, trying to find some compromise, trying to see if we can turn things around in Iraq, and so on. And there is a real tension, I think, you know, in this sort of political time between what plays with the base and what plays mm-hmm. with the sort of the median voter across the country. You know, that I think that puts Democrats in a bind. I'm sure the president is pleased by that. It has largely been he who has been in a bind recently. So at least for a couple of months, he's turning the tables on the Democrats. Mm-hmm. You know, I think again we'll see what happens in September when General Petraeus testifies.
Gary in Madison is with us. Hi, Gary.
Hi. You know, the whole idea of going into Iraq was ridiculous on its face, and the fact that the Democratic leadership did not show any leadership in the lead-up to the war, the hundreds of billions of dollars that have been thrown down a rat hole that could have gone to help the infrastructure in this country, take care of Social Security and all those things, now we have, again, a lack of leadership when the population, much of the population, the voters have even validated a stronger approach to pull out of this ridiculous war. And we need new leadership. Harry Reid has got to go. Mm. He's like the Mr. Whipple. You know, don't squeeze the Charmin, you know.
You know what, though, Gary and Professor Gelpy, Russ Feingold was very complimentary toward Harry Reid, because Harry Reid signed on to his no-funding bill and brought it to a vote, and it just didn't pass.
Yeah, but where's Harry Reid when it really, he should be very, screaming. They should be screaming in the streets. They should be standing on the steps of the Capitol, yelling and screaming and pounding their fists. And where's Herb Kohl? Does he ever crawl out of his foxhole and say anything about things?
I'll ask Leo if he can see if Herb Kohl's saying anything about this. I don't have any reaction in terms of Herb Kohl. But Professor Gelpy, what about, obviously Gary very mad at Harry Reid, but again, Harry Reid was on Feingold's side of this issue last week.
Right, and you know, clearly this is not a bill that Harry Reid is happy with. Mm-hmm. I think it is just sort of the political reality of the Senate that, you know, with the very thin majority that the Democrats have, he can't get through the bill that he would like to get through. And he prefers not to risk taking the blame for not funding the troops. Now, I wasn't sure what Gary meant when he said, I think I understood him to say that a more extreme strategy of getting out has been validated by the American public. And I'm not sure if I understood him right to be saying that. I'm not sure what he meant by that, because I don't think there actually is majority support mm-hmm. for, you know, a kind of an immediate cutting off of funding. I think what you will get majority support for really depends on what kind of options you tell people are on the table. And yes, there is majority support for getting out of Iraq in some way, but even President Bush would tell you he wants to get out of Iraq. The question is how and under what conditions. And, you know, if you put this, if you give people this sort of benchmarks, let's wait and see how much progress they make option, if you put that out there in public opinion polls, that really is the median position, not the Feingold position. Now, among the Democratic Party faithful, the you know, the Feingold and Edwards position is, I think, closer to the median. But, you know, on the sort of national scene, the public isn't quite there yet, at least not until they hear from General Petraeus.
Thanks, Gary, for the call. Don't know if Senator Cole has commented on this new bill, but he did vote for the Feingold bill to defund last week. David in Watertown, hi, you're on the air.
Good morning. Over the last 24 hours, I have heard reports that the president has authorized black ops operations into Iran. It's basically to destabilize the government of Iran. Mm-hmm. Now, if we provoke Iran into any kind of military response, I think the Iraq funding debate would be absolutely second place. This is my concern. I'll take your answers off the air.
Well, the you know, as far as I understand, the Bush administration has been funding black ops into Iran for some time now. So I don't think that's a new thing.
Yeah.
I think there are questions as to what extent the you know, it clearly is a goal of the Bush administration to change the government of Iran. The question would be what tools are they willing to use to do that, and you know, so they've been funding sort of black ops covert destabilization for some time. I'm not sure that that means that they're likely to do anything more in terms of, you know, using overt military force. My, you know, this seems to bubble up to the surface every once in a while. It's usually sort of Dick Cheney who is saying the toughest things on this front. My own view is that the Bush administration is pretty well bogged down in Iraq, and the overwhelming majority of the folks there understand that. So I don't think they're likely to do something that they think would provoke an attack. Now, that doesn't mean that they wouldn't miscalculate and do something that, you know, is more provocative than they thought it would be.
Richard in Green Bay is with us. Hi, Richard.
Yes, hi. Thank you. The war in Iraq, all the reasons given originally for going in there seem not to have any validity. And oil comes to mind as a major reason for attacking Iraq. Our speaker mentioned that Bush benchmarks specified by President Bush had something to do with favoring oil companies. Could he be more specific?
My caller actually brought that up a little bit in more detail, but do you think
right? Yeah. The hydrocarbon law that is part of what the Bush administration wants passed is actually, I think, the idea of a hydrocarbon law is in fact central to trying to bring the civil war in Iraq to an end, because the main resource that's being fought over here is access to oil revenues, and the Sunnis, if there is a sort of a federalization, they are at risk of losing access to all the oil revenue because they're not sitting on the oil. So it is critical that there be a hydrocarbon law that is an agreement about how profits will be distributed. Now, a part of the particular hydrocarbon law that the Bush administration favors would give quite good access to American oil companies, and you know, ever since the outset of the war, when the United States had difficulty in getting a lot of states to come on board with us, the U.S. has consistently favored allied states who were supportive of the war, to begin with, in terms of, you know, getting access to reconstruction contracts, and so this is consistent with what they've been doing for some time. It is true that their hydrocarbon law would give very good access to American oil companies.
interesting question from an anonymous emailer. Whose bill is this anyway? Who should I blame?
Well, I mean, I think it's a bill that is jointly put together by the Bush administration, the Republican congressional leadership, and the Democratic congressional leadership. Mm-hmm. So, much to the chagrin, I think, of the Democratic leadership. But as I said, that what you're going to hear the Democrats say is, you know, just wait and see. They're going to say this is for now, and we'll try again later. Is what they're going to say there, because this is basically the best that they can do for now.
Paul in La Crosse is with us next. Hi, Paul. You're on the air.
Good morning. Yes. About one of the earlier callers had mentioned about how Congress should be on the street corners yelling and screaming and pounding their fists. That's not Congress's job. That's our job. We're the citizens. We tell them what to do, and they do it. Unfortunately, they can't do it with the numbers they have right now. They have to get enough, like Dave Obey and Nancy Pelosi. They need 218 votes. In the Senate, you got to have 51 or 60. But you have to have the votes or nothing gets done. This is the only thing they could do. I hate it. And I want every Republican, like our own Congressman Ryan, who goes to Baghdad over the summer and talks about the progress we're making, they should be called a coward if they haven't left the green zone. It's not fair for these people to keep making these pronouncements about how safe it is over there when they don't have the guts either to visit the country or actually look at what's going on in Baghdad. And they've been doing it for 4 years. It's got to stop. We have to hold them accountable for all these rosy scenarios they've been feeding us for 4 years.
I would say that in terms of how the public is likely to view that, I understand the caller's, you know, feeling about the people who go there and sit in the green zone, and you know, I think Senator McCain did something similar also. Mm-hmm. But I would say that in terms of moving the public, from what I've seen, those kinds of statements from the green zone with a flak jacket on and so on haven't really moved the public very much in terms of thinking that there's progress going on in Iraq. I think actually the public is a little more skeptical than that at this point. Early on in the war, the public was very willing to listen to what the administration said and took them at their word. I think that's no longer the case, and that what really is going to need to happen is not just for there to be congressional trips over there where they pronounce progress, but that Petraeus be able to actually demonstrate some kind of with some kind of facts on the ground about what is progress.
Yeah. What about his comment? I hate this, but the votes aren't there. He gets it.
Well, that's mm-hmm. exactly what Harry Reid thinks too.
Susan and Curtis is with us next. Hi, you're on the air.
Good morning. I merely have a comment to say that Mr. Bush's attitude towards win all the time is very poor, because when you always have to win, somebody loses naturally, and that is never really a winning situation. I'm very upset about it, and this reminds me of the 60s in Vietnam, and we really need to revolt on it.
Well,
thank you.
There's the second person calling for people to take to the streets. What do you think?
It is. I mean, the parallels to Vietnam are quite striking, and if you look at the sort of public attitudes towards Iraq and towards Vietnam, I think there's a great deal of similarity in terms of public opinion about the two. That is, there's a great deal of opposition, but ambivalence about getting out because of the possible consequences of getting out, and ambivalence about how quickly we should get out, but very high levels of dissatisfaction. So the same kind of attitude. There is, however, a huge difference in terms of what we see in the streets, and I think that has everything to do with having an all-volunteer military. That the sort of mm-hmm. engine of protest in that way in the 1960s were young Americans, especially on college campuses, and a lot of those, a lot of the young men on those campuses were aware that they might be asked to go and serve in the war, and now they know that they're not, and so that kind of engine of social protest is not there this time, and I think that is part of the difference.
Thank you, Susan. And Al in Milwaukee is with us now. Hi, Al.
Morning. I think people can understand a little bit of the difficulties here if they realize that Democrats are between a rock and a hard place. On the one hand, they have their base that wants us to get out of the war. On the other hand, there is the Israel lobby and its allies, which want us to stay in Iraq and which want us to attack Iran. People wonder why Hillary Clinton supported the war. You just have to look where she comes from and what her constituency is. And I have to wonder how much of this maneuvering on this bill is a kind of a sham. They sort of have a tacit agreement, perhaps, that they know it won't pass, therefore they can make the public display to satisfy their base while at the same time satisfying the Israel lobby. And counterpunch, John Walsh wrote an article on April 17th about the Iran clause that was taken out of the bill. There was supposed to be a clause in it stating that Bush could not attack Iran without congressional approval, and that was taken out. And
we got too much here and not enough time to go over it all, Al. Let's get our guest to talk about some of it, though.
Well, I do agree that the Democrats are between a rock and a hard place here. I don't think that AIPAC, the Israel lobby, is so much the issue in terms of being either the rock or the hard place on this particular issue, because I think you see a lot of politicians who are not especially connected to AIPAC who are going to be supportive of this bill. I think the real the rock and hard place here is that they don't want to get blamed for not funding the troops, and I think that's really the key issue here that's putting them in a bind more than AIPAC. I certainly think that AIPAC is, you know, a powerful lobbying force. I think there are many powerful lobbying forces in D.C. But I wouldn't be too quick just to blame that particular one for this outcome.
Yeah, and in our final minute, you expect that this will pass Congress, but we'll hear more debate over this whole issue come September.
Yes, I think that's what's going to happen. The Democrats are regrouping for September. They are going to wait and see whether Petraeus gives a sort of a tepid report on progress and then see if they can get enough Republican support to override a veto.
Well, thank you so much for being with us. We really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Christopher Gelpe, Associate Professor of Political Science at Duke University, co-author of Choosing Your Battles, America's Civil-Military Relations and the Use of Force, and the forthcoming Paying the Human Costs of War, American Public Opinion and Casualties in Military Conflicts. We thank him for joining us, and we thank you for listening and for your calls. Thanks to Leo Duran for on-air production. If you would like a CD copy of this or any of our talk shows, call the radio store, 1-800-747-7444. You can also listen to our talk shows that are all archived online on our website for you to listen to at your convenience, wpr.org. I hope you stay tuned. There's much more to come. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.